Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your host, Jen and Joe.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It's been another crazy week.
Crazy week.
Absolutely.
I hear you got some activity in your house
this week. I did. I had a little bit of activity today. I'm actually left a digital recorder in the house when I came here to the studio to tape. I had the same little black fuzzy shadow mist swoosh by me, and then it went super cold standing right next to me. So I don't know if it
was... Gonna have to let me know if you get any.
Yeah, so anything. I did a quick EVP session, and I recorded probably like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And in the background, you can hear whistling.
Awesome.
And it's very, very faint, so I'm going to have to like put it on your fancy doodad editing program, Joe, and see if we can extract that out for listeners.
But on today,
we're
talking all things Bigfoot.
We are. We have so excited, you guys. We have two of the most wonderful guests, very, very knowledgeable. We have Dave and Chad with us. They are from the Lost Cryptids Conservatory. And we'd like to welcome you guys to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Great. So if you guys could both just give us a little background of how you started Lost Cryptid Conservatory and what really sparked your interest in researching cryptids and Bigfoot in general and specifically.
You want me to take this one to start, Dave?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay. The Lost Cryptids is founded by Blake Deutscher. And we've just all collaborated together. He started this a little over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And within the last year, it's grown exponentially. And we just collaborate. We go out together. We share things together. We do things for each other. We've actually become like kind of a family. Let's not call it a cult, but it's basically like a family.
A clan.
We go camping together. We go research together through thick and thin. So that's basically how it happened. I mean, Blake started this a long time ago and was solo, and we've just all come together, and we're all part of it.
So were you all independently researching and then you found each other, or had you been friends prior to this and then decided to come together?
It's a long story because each person's story is different. Mm-hmm. Like, I researched, and some people just fell into this because they had an encounter. So I want to pass this over to Dave so he can explain to you how different people get into it and why he's into it. I'm into it because of an experience and my interest in nature. Dave's into it and never thought he'd be into it for other reasons. And go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, first of all, we are an independent group of researchers. We come from all different areas. We represent several different Facebook pages, including the Michigan Sasquatch Project, the Bigfoot Reporting and Data Center, Gumshoe Guys Corner is another one of our members, as well as the Lost Cryptids Conservatory. We just have many sites that we come from, but we all come together independently in order to research this this topic, and we all bring something to the table. We have a retired police detective. Myself, I'm a retired federal agent. I was a special agent for the federal government. And I wasn't at all interested in the topic until I had retired. I started hiking quite a bit up north and around, and ended up having an encounter. Not hiking, but in my car. And that led me to the group, that led me to report it to the Michigan Sasquatch Project, Bob Daigle, who is one of the gurus in the Midwest with Bigfoot, and just an extremely knowledgeable man, and Mark Hearn, who is his right-hand man, and they kind of put me within the circle of people here that I've joined since, and I go out researching now.
Now, do you do most of your researching just in Michigan, or do you go other places?
We research Michigan, the lower and upper peninsulas. However, we have had people go down to like Salt Fork, Ohio, and Talking Hills in Ohio as well, just because they're fairly close.
Yeah, and they're just as much as a hot spot as Michigan is.
Yeah, really.
Exactly.
So, Dave, I just want to go back a little bit. You come from a background of being a special agent, which is very fact-based. I wouldn't say scientific, but what you have done, how do you approach researching from having that like fact-based background?
Sure. I'm always looking for evidence, forensic evidence, any kind of evidence that we can gather, be it hair, be it footprints, be it knuckle prints, anything of that nature that we're able to collect and send to someone who is qualified, somebody like a forensic anthropologist. We have connections to Jeff Meldrum, who's a great guy, and also connections up to Michigan State University Department of Forensic Anthropology, that we would be able to get such evidence in the hands of scientific people who can do the proper tests and hopefully validate a new species or validate a new animal, primate in North America.
And it's interesting that you say knuckle prints. That's the first time that I personally have ever heard of somebody mentioning knuckle prints.
Yeah.
Always footprints, but that's so interesting. Now, is that something that's very common in this type of research, to find a knuckle print?
It would only make sense for a species of its size and everything to live on all fours most of the day and things. So it would be a very common thing that they're not going to walk around 8 foot tall, even a juvenile is 5 foot tall, and walk around. They're going to crawl around. They're going to be low. It's the only way that they're able. If you look at the theory of it, if they do exist, the only way they'd be able to hide would be on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know Dr. Meldrum had a knuckle print that I saw, and it was very interesting because it was a really odd shape. And the reason it was odd shape is because he said that when the Bigfoot was standing up, he pushed his thumb out, which showed that it's not like a human thumb. It's more of like a Bigfoot thumb, where it had its own distinct shape to it, and which is an awesome thing to have because it shows that they're different than bear or other animals like that.
Has there been reports of the knuckle print in Michigan?
We get them. Dave, you want to answer that too?
We have within our group persons who have been out, and they have cast knuckle prints in the Waterloo area, and we have castings of them.
When they do the castings, whether it's the knuckle print or the footprint, is there distinct prints, like we have fingerprints? Do they have any type
like dermal
of
ridges?
Ridges. Mm-hmm.
Well, you certainly can. It depends on the quality of the print which is left, the material that it's left in, and your ability to get a smooth enough plaster into the cast that records them. Yes, they're entirely possible.
You know, if somebody, like you said, you had an encounter in your car, I don't know if, you know, there have been reports of them approaching houses or trailers or vehicles where they may have touched the surface. And I was just wondering if if anybody has reported that they've left a fingerprint, or if they have those type of markings on their skin.
Yeah, we had one of our researchers actually was out with another, and they were on a bus, and in the middle of the night, something shook the bus and apparently left a face print in the glass of the window of the bus.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you don't get that often. I mean, when you hear about people getting evidence, it's either like hairs or, you know, cast or that, but that would be so interesting to actually, I didn't even think about that, get an actual handprint or a fingerprint or even a face print, because it actually shows the shape of the animal. Or I don't know if I should say animal.
Yeah,
you know?
What term do you guys use to describe it?
Go ahead,
archaic, Dad. Archaic human primate.
There you go. Okay. That sounds a lot better than animal.
We derive from primate, though we're like, I think, two chromosomes off from being a gorilla. Bigfoot is different than us. So there's a chromosomal difference, in my opinion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a scientist. I'm not even qualified to say this. This is my opinion. Mm-hmm. But yet there's so much similarity. There's more similarity between us and Bigfoot than there is between us and gorillas and chimpanzees.
You know, and that's one thing also that I've always thought was, are they, you know, I mean, there's been so many different humanoid species on the earth, and right now we're just the dominant one, but for all we know, and this is just me saying this, but it could be possibly an offshoot of us, like a, what am I thinking?
Neanderthal.
Yeah, like Neanderthal.
Or Davinian mm-hmm. or something.
Because I do know that in research they found that Neanderthals, we always see pictures of them looking more like us, but they actually look a little bit more ape-like. And
I would think that's extinct. I mm-hmm. would think that the Sasquatch species would be an offshoot from that, just like we are most likely an offshoot from that. Mm-hmm. It's not really the Neanderthal. There's so much controversy in this, okay? You guys want to dig deep into this?
Oh, yes, we love it. Let's do it.
Okay. There's beliefs, religious beliefs, that these creatures come from the Nephilim, the fallen angels, mm-hmm. which is written in the Bible, that the Nephilim bore offspring with the women, and the offspring were large, hairy, ugly, and I mean, this is like written in the Bible. There's a lot of controversy in this. There's people that think that these things go interdimensional and portal. I can't say that that's incorrect. All I can say is I've never witnessed it in all my experience. There's people that think, and which I can lean towards a little bit, if you guys were good seeing, we're going to go deep.
Oh yeah,
I can lean towards there's an alien thing with them, because I've always believed there's an alien thing with us. I believe there's an alien thing with them. Now, I'm going to turn this guys over to you and go ahead and just.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many times where you have UFO sightings with the Bigfoot sightings, and I do a lot of research on giants. And a lot of the giant skeletons that have been found, and I mean, some people say, oh, they're 14 to 20 foot. No, a lot of giant skeletons that are found are around 10 foot tall. And they have a lot of the characteristics of what a Bigfoot would look like, you know, as people describe their sightings and that, because, you know, like the big jaws where some giants, like the ones that are found here in Toledo, they said that the jawbones themselves, you could almost fit a regular human skull in between the jawbone. And they also have, like, some of them had double rows of teeth. Those were found farther down the river. But, yeah, I mean, I wholly believe that Bigfoots could be part of the ancient giants. You know, and you know, I've heard so many stories where Bigfoots are found either with blue orbs or there's blue orbs around them. So who knows whether they're interdimensional or solid or even both? Because we say that if they're interdimensional, or if they're beings that are like could be invisible, then why would they leave footprints? So I think they could be both.
And why would they eat?
Yeah.
Listen, why would they eat? I leave them stuff. They eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And, So, but I Maybe it's both.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it's multiple things going on. Power lines are huge.
Mm-hmm.
Electromagnetic frequency is huge in this whole thing. Also, not only with just ghosts and other things, but with Bigfoot.
Yeah, Bigfoots and rods, or even the Thunderbirds are seen lots of times around the power high tension lines.
Yeah, definitely. Dave, when you had your encounter, was there any other, you know, like outside environmental things going on at that time? Or was it like during a thunderstorm, or did you notice any other type of strange activity?
It was about this time of year, and it was cold. We had an unseasonable first snow as well during that same period, but it was not snowing. It was just early November,
mm-hmm.
and I'm driving along actually in Monroe County on near Exeter Road, Stony Creek and Tobin Roads, cutting back over from Ypsilanti going home, and I cut down a county road, and I noticed that everything was very dark, like there was a power outage. And as I drove by, I saw this thing within about 30 yards of the car. And it was just standing there, two arms, two legs, no neck, and blazing red bioluminescent eyes.
Wow.
The eyes were putting off their own light. And I kept driving by it, and it took me a few seconds to register actually what I saw, and kept driving. And then I decided whether or not I was going to turn around and take another look at it, which I decided to leave well enough alone. But I got a good look at this thing, and it looked a lot like people would describe the Missouri Monster.
Mm-hmm.
as having no neck whatsoever, and two blazing red eyes. And I was just shocked. You know, I was not expecting it. I was not looking for it. This is even before I started researching it. This is what began my journey. And it was very shocking and disturbing to see, and it was almost as if this thing was projecting onto me its a sense of fear, that it wasn't my fear, mm-hmm. but it was projecting onto me this feeling, kind of like people who are in front of or around tigers at the zoo can have what do they call help me out here, Chad, the very low sounds.
Infrasound.
And project fear, project emotion onto their targets. So I thought I was targeted very much, and mm-hmm. I kept mm-hmm. going, and I tell you, I still struggle to this day as to what I saw, but I know what I saw. I saw what I saw.
Yeah. Now, were you able to distinguish gender at all?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. I took it to be a male.
Mm-hmm.
I took it to be an alpha male. Just because of the way it stood there, it didn't move. It didn't. I drove by right by this thing, and it didn't even flinch. It didn't go anywhere. It was standing its ground, and I just kept driving.
Now, at any point after you had this incident, did you return back to maybe look at the environment, like the ground, or?
I did, and I drove by to see if it, you know, if it made sense in the daytime, or if there was some way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went by the area, and I've only been by there twice since. I don't like to go back that way.
Yeah.
But I could not find any reasonable explanation as to what I saw and where it was.
Now, in your research, have you ran across anybody else that basically gives us an account that's like that? Because I've heard several times where it's almost like people that witness Bigfoot are paralyzed. Like you said, he's sending out infrasound and paralyzing them.
Right.
Have you run across anybody else that has had that happen?
You want to take this, Chad?
I can take it. It's happened to me many times, and nobody knows what it is. A lot of people think it's a sound wave, and a lot of people, like, along what I believe, is it's electromagnetic frequency. This happens. It's unexplainable. Can we say Bigfoot's doing it to us? No. But things happen to people. It's been witnessed in the middle of the woods to where they're just incapacitated. They're confused. They're lost. They're falling down. They have no equilibrium. What is it? We don't know. I wish I could give you an answer. I believe it's strictly electromagnetic frequency. I believe they use power lines and other ground energy sources to recharge, because you have to. But could it be a sound? Absolutely. Could it be nothing more than a vibrational thing that goes into your brain and messes with your equilibrium? Absolutely. It possibly could be. It's a question that we're searching.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, because there's so many different cases. And even when people, you know, see Bigfoot, sometimes they always say, well, he just appeared and then he just disappeared. So he could be interdimensional. We don't know. I mean, obviously we're all speculating because we don't know.
Oh, you know, like, okay, just for example, when you're out in, say, Upper Michigan and you see a moose, sometimes you don't even detect them.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we could be very close to these creatures and not be able to, you know, see or hear or sense mm-hmm. them. Maybe they have something they can turn on, so we do.
Yeah. You know, and I think that we know that they're hypersensitive, like dogs would be, where their hearing has mm-hmm. got to be a lot better than us. They know we're there before we know they're there.
Right. Now.
Sure. And my feeling on that is that the vast, vast majority of the times, it's not us that decides whether we have the encounter with Bigfoot. It's Bigfoot that decides whether or not we're going to have an encounter with it.
So, and I'm just kind of going off on a rabbit hole here, but like in your research and the group's research, is there any indication of like the lifespan or the life cycle of these creatures? What do you guys think? How long do you think that they live?
That's an unanswerable question.
Okay. All right. Well,
I can give Fair you a enough. Theory. Let's look at this. How long does a human live? Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's look at early 1800s. Male lived to be 45. What's a primate live to be? You know, so just to think, that would make the most sense. It's not an answer, and nothing can be proven. These things could live to be 300 years old. We don't know. But in using common science, they probably live to be 40 to 60.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys hear a lot or get a lot of reports of sightings of just a single individual, or have there been sightings of groups or juveniles or even, you know, infants around Michigan?
There is sightings of groups, but I want you to look at this. Okay. You're out. You're in your garden. You see a Bigfoot. What are you looking at? You're looking at that one Bigfoot. You're locked on that Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing what else is around you. We believe they live in family groups.
Okay.
And we believe that they help each other out, and they all have their certain tasks that they have to do. And there's different age groups. So what I just said to you, if you saw a Bigfoot in the field, are you looking around elsewhere, or are you just looking at that one Bigfoot?
Yeah.
I think, you know, because it is so shocking, whether you see a cryptid or even a ghost, you're directly focused on that one thing, because you're trying to reconcile in your brain. Am I really seeing this? Is this really happening? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and Like
I had another experience in 2017. My first experience in singing in the car was 2018. Mm-hmm. In 2017, I was in northern Michigan in Akiak Falls, and I was camping at the campground there, and they have about 10 or 12 spots. It's very primitive. There's no lights, so it gets extremely dark at night, and the only thing you have for light is your fire. And off across the river, I heard from about four or five different places across the river along maybe a quarter of a mile stretch. I heard whoops, I heard yahoos, and I had, and on that occasion, I had some stones that were thrown into my camp and at my tent that night. Now, I playfully picked up some stones and threw them back at them. but certainly they were there. There was more than one there, and they were spread out encircling camp.
Now, I would say, like in any animal, you're going to have that type of language. Do you think that they're using, say, the wood knocks and the whoops and the calls to communicate with each other to kind of maybe bounce out, like, you're here and I'm here, or you have any sense of, okay, maybe they're just warning that there's some, like, a human in their area? How do you guys feel about, like, their communication style?
I think that given the clans, if they do live in clans, then a lot of the times you have some of them that are on watch while the rest of them sleep during the day, and you have maybe even those that are juveniles that are taught to watch while the rest of them sleep before, like, the apex predators go out at night and do their hunting and whatever. I go ahead, Chad. I sense that you want to get in here with this question.
There you go, sensing me again. He already called me as I was calling him today. I'm like, dude, quit reading my brain.
Remote viewing.
They communicate amongst each other in what I've gathered in my research. I've been out quite a bit and gone on alone quite a bit. They alert the others to where you are. Now, is it a rock clacking on a tree? I don't know. It sounds like a rock clacking on a tree. Is it a stick knocking on a tree? I don't know. It does sound like a stick knocking on a tree. What they're doing, I don't know. But it appears that what they're doing is they're alerting to where you are. Mm. They're letting as you move along. This is what I've gathered. I mean, don't take it for fact. This is just what I've gathered in my research, that they will communicate with each other. When I'm going into their gifting area, I've multiple times had them do stuff as I'm walking along in multiple different places. Can I say it's them? No. Do I believe it's them? Yes.
When you say gifting area, can you just expand on that for our listeners?
Gifting area isn't necessarily a good idea. It's called habituation. Now, when you habituate a Sasquatch, people say, I can't say it's true, but it's probably true, that they start to become dependent. Now, with habituation and gifting is leaving them gifts. And, like, I would leave apples out for them. And I would make, you know, people would say, you know, I'd leave them out and come back. Leave them out in the morning, come back in the afternoon, they're all gone, bag ripped open, no crumbs on the ground. And people would say that, well, you know, it's other animals, all this, put a trail cam out. Never put a trail cam out. I'll tell you all this, okay? You're not going to, what you're going to do is deter a Bigfoot from going to that. So if you're going to gift a Bigfoot and put a bunch of apples on the tree and you put a trail cam up there, they're not going to get it. You're only going to get possums and raccoons, and those apples will still be there. Half of them will be there in 3 months. In gifting, the bad thing is when they become dependent, and they can become destructive. They can I haven't really had it because I only gift in really one area. But if you look at the reports, people that gift around their house tend to have negative results, tend to have destruction. And you know, there's a lot of stories out there of people living out in the middle of nowhere that gift Bigfoot and they rip their doors off. The Janice Curry story.
Let's talk about for a second the gifting and the apples, because I personally have seen deer take apples off of apple trees about 6 or 7 feet up. Mm-hmm. To be clear, let's make sure that we're clear here that these apples that we put in the tree are way higher than any deer could reasonably reach up and get. And we do gift. I like to gift gummy bears. And I have had a little bit of luck with that.
That would work for me.
Absolutely.
Bag of Doritos, I'll be all set.
Absolutely.
No, literally, gummy bears didn't last out there. So.
Now, didn't you mention in one of your YouTube videos about how you found broken branches above the apples? And that the deer wouldn't break branches like that.
No, here's what happened. Mm-hmm. I hung like a whole bag of apples on all these branches really high. I'm 6'8" and can reach really high and pulling branches down. Okay. I hang these branches and I bring other researchers out with me and we go walk through the area. Well, I come back the next day and every branch is broken. Every single branch is snapped off. So that's what we talked about in the one YouTube video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so amazing that when you gift like that too, and like you were saying, it can get to the point where they almost depend on it. And
well, they gift back. They gift back.
Do
Here's
they?
The thing. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
They built me a bench. Listen, there's an area that I always sit at and smoke a cigarette and drink a beer. I always have a drink in my backpack. You got to. Uh-huh. And I always sit there, you know, when I get back there and I sit there and just listen. I've been there so many times alone and this is like a special area. So I always sit there and I go out there with a guy and all of a sudden there's this tree shaking like crazy. It's a little windy, but not bad. We go search for that, but we leave apples in the area. The next day I go back, there's a bench built for me. I swear to you, man. It's wow. Literally impossible. This didn't happen overnight. Humans didn't do it. And it's just this giant bench built for me to sit on. And there's a video from the day before and the video from the day after. And it would have been impossible for me to do. Well, I guess I could have done it, but I couldn't snap the tree in half.
Yeah.
So it was just, was it made up just out of wood?
Yeah, it okay. was a big dead tree snapped in half. You could see both ends, the break, they're perfect. Mm-hmm. And it was set on other dead trees that were brought in and put there, like built like a bench. And these things would know, this is a park. They would know, they would understand a bench. There's benches mm-hmm. in the park. It's like they built this thing for me and nobody goes back there, man. This is in the middle of the thickest of thick shit. I'm sorry.
Fine.
The stuff. The thickest of the thick stuff. I'm sorry.
This is showing an extreme high intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, like chimpanzees or a great ape is not making a bench, right? Like this is showing that this cryptid is definitely using like reasonable mm-hmm. thinking.
They do. They'll communicate with you, but it can be positive. It's not always. I mean, mm-hmm. we can upset them. I have upset them. They're pretty particular and finicky if you deal with them. You don't want to invade their areas. Mm-hmm. If you know where they are, just stay out of it.
Yeah.
Let them be. I've had nothing but bad results going in where I know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have an ability. Let's not call it woo. Let's not call it even. I think it's more of a psychic, a brainwave thing. They have an ability to where they can do things to you. They can emit, like, I believe it's a frequency. It's just a, like, it's a frequency like a ghost hat. They can emit this, and it can affect you, and they can direct it. I've been out to where I'm the only person that's just gets hammered. I've been out with people that have gotten hammered, and I'm fine. And I know other people also that have been out where it's them that's fallen down the woods, don't know where they are, all confused, and everybody else is fine. It's almost like they can direct it. I don't know. It's confusing.
Well, we've heard that.
I believe you.
On my occasion, I got zapped. You call it being zapped. And it had caused a cardiac event. It caused my heart to go to AFib and stop beating properly. And it caused me almost to, like, have a heart attack. And to that degree, I think it wasn't the fear. I think that they're able to project this upon people. I think that they do have the ability to read you and the ability to affect you as well. Other people report, you know, dizziness, that they would fall down or basically pass out for short periods of time as well. So yeah. I do think the physical things that happen are they're a real thing.
Yeah.
I mean, don't forget loss of time. Loss of time is a common thing that happens with Bigfoot researchers when they have an experience.
You know, Joe and I do a lot of digging into missing 411 cases, and I just wonder if there's a way to overlap Bigfoot experiences with, some of these people who do go missing, because maybe they just accidentally wander into their space and people will research and be out looking for them. They can't find them, and they go right back to where they had already looked, and the body's there. So I have to wonder if, you know, these cryptids have, or Bigfoots, either assist or had something to do with some of these people that go missing in the woods. Like, I don't know what the statistics are in Michigan, but, you know, how many people go? Normal. Yeah.
So let's throw a little bit of a ringer in here. Let's think about this. What if there is a place? What if portals do pop up here and there? What if somebody just happens to walk into one and disappear? I mean, this is a theory that is considered, that there, when certain energies are just right, and if somebody walks into it, it's like in Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that's very much could be a possibility. You know, Bigfoot could have the ability, if they have the ability to point and direct, you know, some kind of frequencies towards somebody, why wouldn't they have the ability to maybe go in and out of an interdimensional portal?
Yeah, I understand what Jen is saying, how, you know, some of these cases of missing persons, they may either go into the portal or go into the dimension or that, and what she's saying is the Bigfoots might actually bring them back, set them on the trails where the other humans have been so that they find them.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know. I mean, that's what's so great about all this is we don't know.
Yeah. And I always think that, you know, like in any society, whether it's humans or animals or, you know, cryptids, there's different personalities. Like one could just be a very sweet, you know, kind one, and one could be more aggressive and don't want anything to do with humans. But then you have some that, like, are gifting you things. You know, I've heard a couple of cases where children were lost, and they were saying, well, the big hairy man kept me warm, you know. So
North Carolina, The recent one, the three-year-old boy lost for over 72 hours, found on an island in a river that was previously searched on day one. Mm-hmm. And he claims in the middle of February, we're in the mountains of North Carolina, a black bear would be hibernating, claims a bear fed him and kept him warm and protected him.
Yeah.
But what would a three-year-old, would they know any better? That would be the only thing he could describe it as, because he knew of bears.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I just wonder if, you know, I don't know. I just lost my train
brain
of thought.
Fart.
Yeah. Ever since I had COVID, I like go into these brain farts. But no, I'm just saying that, you know, me personally, and I'll just tell you my personal opinion, I think they are a living being. And I think that they just want to be left alone. And we should leave them alone. You know, I mean, I just don't want that mystery to just be solved, because I love mystery. I always want that mystery to be out there. And if they are flesh and blood and living, you know, on this planet as many other creatures do, I just, you know, personally, leave them alone. Let them do their thing. It's just like, you know, leave the tigers alone, or leave the elephants alone, or, you know, leave the Joe Shortridges alone. But, I just fascinates me, though, that, you know, we have so many sightings right here in this area. Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania. You know,
we certainly do, and that is why our one of our compadres, Val, at Michigan Bigfoot Reporting and Data, Gumshoe Guy, he's a retired detective, has compiled thousands of Bigfoot reports in the area and for Michigan. And what he does with the data, he collects it, and then he looks for commonalities in the data. Like one thing we spoke earlier about the connection between Bigfoot and UFOs, and he does not like to admit it, but he does find a correlation between UFOs, orbs, and Bigfoot reportings. And another thing that he will tell you is that the nature of the encounters are not always positive, and it seems as though Bigfoot have the entire range of personalities the same way that humans do. Myself, I believe that Bigfoot is an expert woodsman, and they're going to see you and smell you coming a mile away, even before you can even get close to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, like I was saying earlier, that's what I think. They can sense you a lot. And I mean, regular, like, dogs and even other animals in the woods, deer and stuff, they'll know that you're there before you even have any idea that they're close by. But so when you guys go out, one thing I wanted to ask you is, what do you keep in your field kit? What kind of gear would you recommend if someone was to actually go out searching for Bigfoots? What kind of gear do you have in your field kit?
It depends on how far you're going, what your plan is. If you're just going out for a day hike, just carry a light bag, have water, you know, maybe a special beverage in there too, you know. I like duct tape. I really do. Yeah. I always carry a roll of duct tape because it isn't an emergency. And I also like to carry a tarp. I always have that in my backpack. Other than that, you know, there's water, you know, lunch, maybe a white cloth or two.
I have a, always carry a means of making fire. And Chad has a very unique way of making fires. He'll use an old sock. It does work. But you light the sock on fire, and then put small stuff around it, and it will take off. So he does have fire with him as well. And we also carry in our bags, like paper bags, some Q-tip type swabs. We carry some tweezers, rubber gloves. We carry a lot of times, most of the time I carry stuff to make a plaster cast with. which means it's a large freezer bag and mm-hmm. plaster Paris, and then at least a liter of water to make a cast out in the field if need be. If you can't, and he's exactly right about the tarp. You cover it with the tarp and you preserve the print, and you mm-hmm. come back like the next day or even the same day if it's a good enough print to make your cast. I always carry something for the rain. And weather as well, to be yeah. prepared for the weather. And always some extra food, like apples for gifting, gummy bears. Always like some extra food with you if you're going to be out there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave brings apples and gummy bears. He eats them all.
Well, like anytime we go on an investigation, we have to have snacks. Yeah. Like that's the most important part. Who cares about the ghosts or the Bigfoots? We need snacks. Right. What about, you know, just as far as like your electronics, are you guys taking your cell phones out? Are you taking cameras?
Yeah, we broadcast live to our YouTube channel, the Lost Cryptids Conservatory, and to our Facebook group as well, from the actual from the actual expedition that we go on, and we will broadcast live. In addition to that, we have GoPros that we wear. We have harnesses for the GoPros so that they point basically wherever we point, mm-hmm. and we get really good video from the GoPros.
Yeah.
We have parabolic microphones. We have digital recorders that we use. We have access to FLIR as well.
Oh, nice.
Sometimes when we go out. And any number of other tools, binoculars, and having a compass is a great piece of equipment to have with you, because you can use your phone, the compass on your phone, but that doesn't always work when you're out of cell range and you have a hard time with signal and stuff like that. So you do really need to be prepared. And ultimately, you know, we want to get that video. We want to get the audio, the howls, even anything we can. And with the howls, we were speaking about it earlier, and what kind of noises they make and whatnot. But they also, we should mention, mimic owls. They mimic coyotes. They mimic wolves. So it could be a Sasquatch making the sound of a coyote, making the sound of an owl. So we need to be cognizant of that as well.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I would definitely recommend is, because you mentioned about how your cell phone could go out, is a personal GPS tracker. And I know
Absolutely.
That's one thing I was talking to David Paletis about, and two things he always carries is a pistol and a GPS tracker, because, you know, where he goes is a lot of bear and stuff. But it's so important to make sure that you don't go out alone. And
Chad, you mentioned you go out by yourself, and you said you go way out. Now, you know, do you ever have any fear around that, being out there completely solo?
I've had fear when I've been with people. I don't go solo as much as I used to because of the things that have happened to me. Mm-hmm. But it can be fearful. I mean, if you're really out there and you're with alone or with one other person, that's when you're going to get interaction. If you're out there with six people at a camp out, mm-hmm. they'll come up to camp, but they're not going to make themselves that known. If you're alone, they'll get brazen. They will let you know they're there. It's totally different. I mean, people, trust me on this. This is the truth. If you want to actually have a uncomfortable encounter, go alone or go with this one person in the middle of nowhere that has sign of Bigfoot. They'll come. They'll come find you.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Now, my spin on that is that there's certain people that are experiencers, and there's certain people that are not. Mm. And the people that are experiencers, you're just wired a little bit differently in order that you're able to have encounters such as these. I've encountered things my entire life, ranging from paranormal to UFO to Bigfoot. And again, you know, I'm not a crackpot. I'm a retired federal agent, and mm-hmm. they give you many, many, many psychological tests in order to become one.
Right.
Having put my spin on it there with the fact that some people are experiencers and are more likely to have encounters than people who are not. And I think that's because they can read you.
Yeah.
They can mm-hmm. read your feelings. They can read your soul.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, you held a conference over the summer, correct? Now, was that the first time that you had done something like that?
You want to go ahead, Chad? I guess I'll go ahead. It was our first conference. It was our first conference that we had, and certainly the first conference that I spoke at. And what I felt when I was speaking and relaying my experiences for the first time, you know, you feel some of the things you experience come back,
mm-hmm.
and it's like you're almost there again. So it was kind yeah. of a difficult thing to do. We held a conference at Dewey Lake for the Dewey Lake Monster, which was a monster in the early 60s, about the same time as we had the Monroe Monster up here in Michigan, in Monroe, Michigan, that was happening. And we actually went out, we did a town hall meeting and conference, and we actually went out and did field research. But most importantly, we had people that came forward who had never had their stories told, never came forward with their stories and their information. And they were, at that time in the 60s, they were young kids. So it was great to get some firsthand reports and to meet these people,
mm-hmm.
and to go out and to look at the area itself.
Yeah, I looked into that, and I was hoping to come to it because it's really not that far away from us. It's only a few hour drive, and I was really hoping to make it to it, but something came up, and I don't remember what. But
well, it was in the middle of COVID too, so
that's
like,
true,
you know,
too,
like,
yeah. But
people
yeah.
are a little fearful.
It still went on. We weren't
mm-hmm.
shut down.
Yeah.
Now, That's so interesting that you say that people had come forward and had never, you know, had their or been able to tell their story or had the confidence or you know, wherewithal to tell their story. I think that's what's great about when you guys do town hall meetings or put on these events, that, you know, people feel comfortable being able to come out. And for the first time, you know, almost releasing that from, mm-hmm. you know, like, I've experienced this and I'm not crazy. This is what we hear a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought I was crazy, but I've had this experience. And then, you know, they come around other people and get involved in these groups. And I think that's just a really wonderful thing, that people feel comfortable that they can share their stories and untell the secrets that they've held for a long time, because, you know, holding on to that stuff, It can be detrimental. And a lot of people, Joe and I have, you know, people in all different age groups come forward and say, you know, I've had this experience, mm-hmm. but I've never told anybody.
Yeah.
And being able to come to an event like your guys's that you held, I just feel like it's a good public service. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all in like mind and non-judgmental
yeah.
of being able
that
to
was my
share
first,
that story.
That was my first conference I ever attended, and I spoke at it.
Oh.
And
your first timer.
yeah, yeah.
Bravo, so bravo.
It's not. And it takes a lot of bravery for these people to come forward and
yeah.
and relate these bizarre experiences that they've had in their lives. But I think it's important. and important that they are noted, that they're documented, that their data is collected. We have a data collector in our group, and that's all he does is collect reports and data and crunches the data and tells us, you know, as to what time of year, what time of day, you know, that people are most likely to encounter them in their car or while farming or hunting or backpacking, I think are some of his data points. But that we're able to use this information in order to find some commonalities between the reports that can, that these reports can end up verifying one another almost.
So are you guys going to have,
so similar.
Yeah. Are you guys going to have the conference again?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you guys got any questions, man? Challenge us. We can only give you theory. We can tell you what we've studied and what the ask away.
Yeah. So it was at the Silver Lake Brewing Company.
Yeah, it was Sister Lake Brewing.
Sister Lakes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I really want to make it next time.
Yeah, we're definitely putting it on our plate. COVID or no COVID, we're coming.
Yeah.
I just have one quick question before we wrap it up. Sorry, we have to wrap it up, but we definitely, you know, would love to have you guys back and dig even deeper.
I want to get more into the woo-woo stuff.
The woo-woo. Really we love the woo-woo.
Man, I'll tell you the what people say, not necessarily what I believe, but I'll tell you what people say about it.
Yeah. So my question is, in the research or in the group, have you ever felt, and this might be opening a can of worms, but I'm going to ask it
just
anyways.
Do it.
Have you ever felt like the government has kept eye on what you're doing or been aware or maybe, I can't think of the exact word that I want, but do you ever feel like there is an interest from the higher levels on what
we're on Facebook? Let's answer it simply. Yes, of course. Everything is public knowledge. Yeah. And do I think the government gives a crap about us? No, we're not big enough yet. Eventually they might, but right now, no. But yes, I do believe they're watching.
I believe the government does and have people implanted in all sorts of organizations, such as even MUFON or the BFRO.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And that is, seems to be, from my experience, their method of operation, and to keep tabs on things like that. And for there to be a government conspiracy behind all of this, and maybe this is another show completely, but for the government, Department of Natural Resources and other governmental agencies to know about this topic and even to control the population, to control the reportings, to control whether or not people talk about their encounter or threaten people not to talk about their encounter, I think is entirely possible. It's within the range of possibilities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have you guys back because I can go real on the rabbit hole trail, let me tell you, about this stuff.
I'd like to leave you guys with an experience I had in 2020. If you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, this is off the trail. I'm a Bigfoot researching, and we're finding no Bigfoot evidence. We're in northern Michigan, and we're during that super moon that had the eclipse the same night.
Oh, yeah.
We're out during that. Okay? That just happened this year. What was it? The strawberry moon with the eclipse.
Yeah.
And We're out there, and all of a sudden, my dog, there's three of us and my dog. My dog starts growling at something. Something runs in front of us on all fours. We assume it was a cat. We don't know. It was big. Ran across. Well, right after that, all of a sudden, I fall down. It's like almost like I got pushed down. But every time I tried to stand up, I kept getting pushed back down. I tried to stand up and something was pushing me back down. Well, now this sounds funny, but when I finally got up after this happening like three or four times, all of a sudden I'm looking at Brian, who's one of the three of us, and the same things happen to him. Every time he's standing up, he's getting pushed down. And then all of a sudden it all stops. Well, we go back to camp. And my dog, who was with us, is all of a sudden gone, disappeared, just nowhere to be found. I'm not too worried because my dog always comes back.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Bill, the guy that didn't get pushed down in the woods, all of a sudden falls down in camp. And then he gets up and he goes to, after that happened, then a few minutes go by, he goes to go to the bathroom and he goes by his truck. He's yelling, he yells, "Hey, man, I know where your dog is." And we're like, I'm like, where? Your dog's in my truck. My dog was locked in his truck.
What?
This is no lie, man. No, there's witnesses to this. I can
and
bring
nobody people. Else. Nobody else there to do this.
Yeah.
No, you there's witnesses to all of this and to us getting pushed down. Listen, there was no Bigfoot activity happening. I don't know if it was Native American, what was happening, whatever. Something was there. I don't know what.
Yeah, you would have heard the truck door open and close.
Yeah.
Well, my dog was with us in the woods.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's a true story.
The things that you see in the woods.
Wow.
You never know. Well, you never know. I mean.
If dogs could talk. Right.
There's more out there than Bigfoot, even though I'm a Bigfoot researcher and all that. There's so much more paranormal, and I'm aware of pretty much most of it. But I mean, it's a mysterious world.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You guys keep up your good job, and you keep getting that information out there.
We have to
let people realize. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh no, thank you.
Yeah, you guys have been incredible, and thanks for sharing your story with us, because you know it really helps us connect with you and with other like-minded, and our listeners really enjoy hearing, because we do a lot of the ghost talk, right? Mm-hmm. And when we get into cryptids and Bigfoot, that really sparks our interest. But you guys are always welcome back to the show. We enjoy having you.
You know, one of the number one places for Bigfoot encounters is cemeteries. There you go.
Oh,
I did not know that.
No.
Yes, one of. Number one is driving. Number two is cemeteries.
Wow. That's so interesting, because Joe and I spend a lot of time in cemeteries. Yeah.
We do a lot of traveling.
We're on the lookout.
Yeah.
We're on the lookout.
Yeah. Because we look for the history, right? Mm-hmm. We're always looking, okay, we go to this little town and let's go look at old gravestones. And well, now we got to look for Bigfoot, Joe. Yeah. I'm so excited.
So we'll put all your info in our show notes for, and so that people can check out your websites and your definitely the YouTube channel.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't get a chance to look at the complete videos. I'm gonna go back tomorrow or whatever when I get a chance and actually watch your videos from front to begin or front to end. And
yeah, so awesome. If you guys could just for our listeners, if you could just let them know where to go to contact you guys or look at your videos.
Okay, we're on Facebook at the Lost Cryptid Conservatory. We are on YouTube, Lost Cryptids Conservatory, where you can check out the videos. You can contact us through Facebook. We have several of our emails there, as well as you can instant message us. And people have reports and stuff like that in the area. You know, please get a hold of us. We're very interested in going out and looking at these things.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
And thank you, Jen, for another great show.
Thank you, Joe.
We're going to leave with some 60-second crush Detroit rock and roll. The song is Destructive. Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week.